Now let's get started. In session one, what Gary's going to teach us is how to develop a strong financial foundation and then how to build upon that foundation.
So we want to have a good time with this today. We're going to talk about something that's really important to God, though. And a lot of people really aren't aware how big a deal this is. They think it's just one more thing we got to deal with. But from our standpoint as believers, money and possessions, one thing you need to know, are mentioned in the Bible twice as many times as faith and prayer combined. Which doesn't mean it's more important than faith and prayer, okay? It just means that God has put that in there and uses it as an example of some things He expects of us as far as behavior goes. The best financial planning book I've ever read is this one. But it doesn't have any recommendations in it on which mutual funds to buy, how to buy insurance, how to put your kids through college, how to buy a house. But it's full of principles. And if you'll follow the principles, you're going to make good decisions. A couple of things I want to just kind of set the stage. 75% of two-earner families in America today are two paychecks from poverty. And what that means is, if one of them were to lose their job, which we're hearing a lot of that going on today, that within about 2 weeks to a month, they're not paying all their bills again. Now here we are, the wealthiest country in the world, and we're living like that. Only 10% of Americans balance their checkbook every month. Some of you may be guilty of that. A lot of you just, what do? Stick the card in your ATM and check your balance, and you know if you're okay or not. And then money problems are listed as one of the top three reasons for divorce. And that's an interesting statistic, because when they've done all these interviews, they found out it wasn't the lack of money that caused it. It was the fact that they couldn't agree on it. Couples need to become one financially. And I mean, as one person. You know, in Genesis it says, man is to leave his mother and father and cleave unto his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And what that means in the Greek is they cleave. They blend together and become one. And you need to be of one mind when it comes to money. A dangerous trend that we see today, and I see in working with couples, is that we've got separate stuff. She has her check, I have my check. She pays these bills with her check, I pay these bills with my check. And we're not putting things together and figuring it out together. We're just kind of still operating as single people. Now the danger there, folks, is that opens the door for secrets. And if you've been through this before, you know that holding a secret and then having it discovered is not a very comfortable thing. It's not good for the relationship. So you've got to figure out a way to get on the same page financially. My goal here is not to solve every financial problem you have. It's to have you leave here thinking differently about money than you ever have. That's all. If I can get you to begin to think differently, then the change is going to begin to take place. The perspective that most of us today possess when it comes to money is a worldly perspective. It's what the world tells us is okay and right and expected. And this is what you should do. This is where you should be. This is what you ought to have. Versus God's perspective on money, which His perspective is, I've given you enough. Be a good manager of what I've given you. Okay, it's a hard shift to make, because it's like you're going down I-30 100 miles an hour toward Greenville, and you realize you need to be in Garland. You don't just do a bat turn and come back 100 miles an hour. You've got to slow down, make a decision to slow down, exit at the next exit, make a U-turn, turn around, come back, and accelerate this way. Well, that's what we're going to have to do. We're going to at least get you to the level where you go, you know what, I need to make a change. It's time to take my foot off the accelerator and look for an exit. So that's really what we're talking about today, is changing your perspective. And I tell couples this all the time, the thing that God cares about most is your relationship with Him and your relationship with each other. But the thing that Satan cares about most is your relationship with God and your relationship with each other. So if he can take this one issue of money and use it to divide you two or to put a wedge between you and God, that's exactly what he's going to do. And you may have had battles with each other about money in the past. You need to understand that that battle is not with your spouse. And if you can become a team here, you can battle the one who's trying to divide you. Now, let's get some perspective here. This line represents eternity. How long is eternity?
Forever.
It's kind of hard for us to even fathom how long that is. It always has been, it always will be. If that line represents eternity, let's say that that little dot on that line represents your 80 years on this life, on this earth. So what do we spend most of our time focusing on, the line or the dot?
The dot.
The dot. Us. What's going on with me? If we back up and say, what's God's perspective on this? What do you think he's looking at? He's looking at the line. He looks at everything from an eternal perspective. He wants us to get that same perspective, an eternal one. What are we doing today that's going to affect eternity? Not what are we doing today that's going to affect my lunch hour. And as we begin to get his perspective on money and the eternal aspects of it, we begin to behave differently. Let's do a little self-assessment before we get started. Here's the financial fitness scale. From 1 to 3, you're in this stage. You're in crisis. Right now, you're having a hard time paying your bills. More is going out than coming in. You have credit card debt. They're jacking the interest rates up, probably over 25% now. You're in trouble. Or you may be in that 3 to 10, which is the treadmill. And that's where most people are. And that's actually the worst place to be, because you're lured into thinking you're okay. We're getting by. I don't think God intended for us to get by. But we're doing okay. We're still kind of paycheck to paycheck. We're not getting out of debt, but we're maintaining. And then you have the very last end of it, right at the end. If you're a 10, if you're financially free, and you have no debt. So think about where you are on that scale today, and how you can apply some of what you're going to learn today to moving toward that financially free stage. Everybody has a financial philosophy. Now, you may not, if I ask you to write down your financial philosophy in 100 words or less, you would probably give me what I like to call the hoot owl look. It's like, what are you talking about? But you have one. It's how you act every day. It's what you do with money, how you write checks, how you pay bills, whether or not you use credit cards and pay them off every month, or you carry a balance. Everything you do in regard to money is a reflection of your philosophy or your attitudes about money. Now, what happens is those attitudes they drive us to act in a certain way and to make decisions a certain way. You may have a philosophy that I'm going to have a new car every 2 years. You may know people that do that, and it's like clockwork. Every 2 years, they get a new car. That's part of their philosophy. So our attitudes or our actions drive, our attitudes drive those actions. And then our actions, once we act, create the situation we're in. Now, some of us have attitudes that cause us to make bad decisions, which cause our consequences to be very uncomfortable. You may have been there. And then when we cycle back up, what we hope is if the consequences were bad, we look up here and go, I've got to change the way I think so that I don't ever go back there again. If the consequences are good, it should affirm that attitude and go, this is where we're doing okay. This is a good move. In Romans 12:2, he says this. Don't be conformed to the image of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your actions. Is that what he says? No. What does he say? The renewing of what? Your mind. You have to change the way you think before you'll change what you do. Folks, until you change the way you think, you're not going to change the way you act. That's why it's so important to understand what God wants you to do in this realm. Another concept I want you to get across today, and you write this in big letters somewhere on your book. It's not my money. And the Bible says that God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. It says, The earth is the Lord's and all that's in it. He owns all of it. The money that you have been given to manage on a weekly, monthly, daily basis is actually God's money. And if you're managing someone else's money, do you tend not to be a little more careful? You know, like at work, you're kind of watching because you know they're going to audit you. Yet we have people that have attitudes like, don't tell me what to do with my money. It's my money. It's God's money. We've been given the responsibility to manage effectively. So this concept of understanding, I'm here to learn how to manage God's money better, not my money better, hopefully will change a little bit of your perspective and how you think. So today we're going to build a house. Okay? And in building a house, there are certain things that have to take place in certain order. Have anybody built a house recently? You know, they come in and clear off the lot, get it all cleared off. What's the very first thing they put down? The foundation. They don't build the roof first and then start building the house up under it, do they? Now, here's a contrast between what's called traditional financial planning and what we're going to show you later on called new paradigm financial planning. Traditional financial planning, I was taught in my business to talk about the roof, if you will, the end product, the final stage, savings for retirement and college, and those things that are way out here. We sit down, here's how much money you need to save, here's your goal, let's figure out how much you got to come up with basically no consideration for exactly where you are today. And if we don't figure out where we're starting from, it's going to be extremely difficult to plan where we're going. So we're going to build a house, and we start with a foundation, and the foundation is God's Word. You cannot build a financial plan, a biblical financial plan, without understanding what God says about it. It's impossible. Think about what's going on today. We've had all this turmoil in the last 2 weeks. Everybody's worried about how, you know, the housing market. People have gone out and made bad loans. They've taken out bad loans. And what's happening? Because they didn't build their house on the principles that God set out, a lot of them are losing their houses. A lot of them are suffering financial collapse. And so we've got to make sure that when we start to put together our financial house, that we understand the principles that God has given us. It's not about programs, folks. It's about God's principles. You know, there are hundreds of programs out there that are effective, and they're good. But until you understand the principles or the why you need to do this, the how is not going to help you at all. I already mentioned that money and possessions are mentioned in the Bible twice as many times as faith and prayer combined. Most of Jesus' parables include money. You think about it, the rich young ruler. Even the loaves and fishes is actually a metaphor for supply, for God's provision. You need to understand that your attitudes equal your actions. Remember that how I think is driving what I do. A good question to ask yourself is why? You go out and you buy something or you do something and you go, why did I do that? And think back through what may have motivated you to do that. Some of it may, well, I deserve it. You know, that's a good worldview now. You deserve it. Go get it. You don't have the money? That's okay. We'll finance it for you. We'll figure out a way to get you the money. That's what's happened in the housing market. They had people that had no business in the world buying a home, qualifying them for loans for one reason, so that the mortgage companies could make money. And now it's at the expense of these people who had no business in a house in the first place are losing them. And the mortgage companies are losing money. And guess who ends up paying for it all? We do, eventually. It's all about attitudes. You have to target specific behaviors. And what I mean by that is you have to look at what you're doing and go, okay, does this behavior need to change? What is it that I'm doing that's not helping me be a good manager of God's money? And then probably the most important thing is to set realistic goals. We'll come back to this in a little while. A lot of times when I sit down with a couple, I'll ask, one of the very first things I ask them is, tell me about your goals. And there's always hesitation. I have never sat down with someone who could specifically say, I want to be in a position to retire at age 60 on this amount of money per month. I want to be able to send my kids to college. We're saving this amount. They just don't have that. Sit down together and set realistic goals, goals that you can reach, not, you know, they, oh, it'd look good. When would you like to retire? Tomorrow? How much you got saved? Nothing. No. You know, it's funny, but it's sad. So set realistic goals. Do short-term things. Well, and again, we're going to talk about that in a minute when we talk about spending plan. The next thing you need is professional help. You've probably had a family member tell you that once or twice. You do need professional help when it comes to money. Why? Because, look at this, only 5% of the people in America today have formal financial training. So you need that help. If you don't have that training, we need to look at Proverbs 12:15. Here's what God says about that. Fools think their own way is right, but the wise listen to others. There are people who know more about certain things than you do. If you had a plumbing problem, you wouldn't hesitate to call a plumber. But when it comes to finances, for some reason, people are reluctant to talk to anybody. And that brings us to seek biblically based financial counseling. There's nothing wrong with you asking someone that you're getting advice from if they believe in Christ, if they're a believer. Or ask them for their testimony. Nothing wrong with that at all. You're actually hiring them so you can interview them. So don't feel weird about doing that. That's totally a reasonable thing to ask about. Now, after you seek professional help, then you need accountability. We need accountability for two things. One of them is so we will follow through and do it, but also because, folks, we're going to be held accountable. It says in the Bible that each man's going to stand in front of Jesus and give an accounting of his life. We're going to be there. Now, here's the catch. If in fact, Jesus showed up at your house every first of the month and wanted to go through your checkbook, would you be a better money manager than you are right now? If you knew he was coming? Okay, now if you know that, why aren't you? Because the Bible tells us he could come in a flash. I might not even finish this sentence, and he walks in this room. And that could be it. He expects us to be accountable. Your accountability partner cannot be your spouse. Why is that? You're afraid to say it. I'm not. I'll tell you why, because we know how to manipulate each other, don't we? I know when to say some things and when not to say some things, right? And she knows how to get what she wants from me in certain ways. That's just the human side of us. So as you're beginning this journey, you need to find a third party to be accountable to. Eventually, you can become accountable to each other. As your philosophy starts to blend, you start to agree on more things, you're understanding it, then you can be accountable to each other without it causing problems. The next thing you need is an emergency fund. It's for emergencies only. You need to write that down in big letters somewhere. An emergency is not coming home on Friday after working with those people you don't like a whole lot, having a terrible week, and going, if we don't go out to eat tonight, there's going to be an emergency. That's not an emergency. An emergency is something you could not have planned would happen. It's not something you failed to plan for. Typically, what we do is we create our own emergencies by not planning. Okay? We typically, by nature, are what I call reactive money managers. We just sit around like financial firemen. We sit around and wait till the alarm goes off, and then we spring into action and we solve this financial problem we've got right now, and then we go back and we sit at the station and we wait until another one rises up and it takes all our attention and we got to go solve it. And we just move from crisis to crisis to crisis with a, you know, few breaths in between. Folks, you've got to move from that stage to the proactive stage. The proactive stage is where we're beginning to anticipate things that are going to happen. Now, what I mean by that is, let's say you go over here and you buy a set of tires at Discount Tire. Now, when they sell you those tires, they'll sell you road hazard warranty and all that stuff, but do they guarantee that set of tires for the rest of your life? No. Yet how many of you, the last time you bought a set of tires, started the next month setting aside a little bit of money to pay for that next set of tires you were going to have to buy in a couple of years? No, what we do is we wait, and we wait, and we wait until the metal's showing on the thing, or we have a blowout, and then, oh no, it's an emergency, we got to go get tires. And we'll have to use a credit card, or we're going to have to charge it, we have created our own emergency by not planning ahead. It's all in the way you think. It's thinking ahead versus just waiting. Does that make sense? Now, we need to manage this emergency fund. You don't just have this money there. The financial planning rule of thumb is 3 to 6 months income set back in a money market account or something of that nature. And a lot of people would love to have that, especially with the economy doing what it's doing now. And some folks have gone through a layoff, know that you wish you'd had that kind of money set back. That's out of reach for most people, especially when you're starting out with nothing. So what we usually recommend is you work up as quickly as you can to a minimum of $1,500. $1,500 will put a transmission in your car. It'll buy a new appliance if it goes out where you don't have to go finance it. But that's a bare minimum. You start there and then you work up from there. But you also have to manage the money that's in that account. You can't just stick it in there. Here it is. I can't draw it as well as that slide, but here's how it works. You got a little handle up there. Inside you have a fill pipe and a float on an arm. Now, if you're not used to how this looks, go home, pull the lid off the top and look at it when you get home, and you can see how this works. So when you use it, the thing you do is you push down the handle, that raises a little flap or a little cup at the bottom, and that opens it up so that the water that's in the tank will flow out and down the sewer. And then when that water level drops, this thing closes back up. And because you have, if you'll look down on the, usually it's on the lower left-hand side on the wall, there's a valve down there. It has a pipe that comes up. You'll hear that water start to run back in there. It runs in here, this arm is dropped down, and it keeps coming up, until the float levels off, and then it shuts off. And it's ready for the next use. I mean, think about it. Isn't that awesome? You don't even think about that, do you? But what happens if we were to cut off this water supply right here, and we used it, and the water went down, and no water came back up? How good would the commode be after that? It'd be useless. It would be absolutely useless. It'd be, you could plant flowers in it or something, but you couldn't use it for anything. It's got to have a supply. The commode theory of emergency fund management. Now, if nothing else, you're going to remember this illustration. Your water level is your $1,500. Okay? And let's say that you have a bona fide emergency. Maybe somebody runs into you and they don't have insurance and it was their fault, and you've got to come up with a $500 deductible to get your car fixed. Okay, you take it out of your emergency fund. Now you've got $1,000 in there. What should you do right after that? If you're going to be proactive, you start to replenish that here. Your dollars start going back in. So what you do is you adjust your lifestyle over the next 2 or 3 months, cut back on eating out, not doing as much, so you can fund or refund your emergency fund and get it back up to $1,500. But you know what most folks do? They'll get down to $1,000. Hey, I still got $1,000 there. And I don't know, I've been living long enough that I know my emergencies come in groups of three, all within about a month and a half or 2 months. I don't know why that is, but we'll go 4 years with nothing. All of a sudden, boom, boom, boom. And they'll have another emergency, it'll get down to $500, and then they'll have another emergency. If they're not replenishing that, how good is their emergency fund after that third emergency? It's useless. And then they're forced to go seek outside help like credit cards. By the way, your Visa card is not your emergency fund. That's somebody else's money. That's not God's money. That's not the money He gave you. So don't fall back on that. You take the money He's given you, you invest it wisely in your emergency fund, and then you keep replenishing it. Every time your level drops, you figure out a way to get that back up. And once it gets to 1,500, then you can go back to doing some of the other things. Does that make sense?